Welcome to the Ag Finance Policy Committee. Today's date is Monday, February 22nd. I'll call the meeting to order. Good afternoon. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Roll call, please, Mr. Smith.
Chair Sundin is present. Representative Vang?
Present.
Vang present. Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Burkle?
Burkle present.
Burkle present. Eklund excused. Hansen R?
Hansen R present.
Hansen R present. Hansen J?
J present.
Hansen J present. Cleavorn?
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert?
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Lewick?
Lewick present.
Lewick present. Miller?
Present.
Miller present. Nelson? Not yet. And Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. We do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. You have before you the minutes of the last meeting of the Ag Committee. What's your pleasure on the minutes, Vice Chair Vang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of February 17, 2021.
Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Hearing none, seeing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. And motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have a busy day today. We have special guests and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture report and three bills. So all the meeting material was posted and provided ahead of the meeting. First up is a visit from two Minnesota FFA state officers as part of their FFA week. We just have about 5-10 minutes for this, and then we'll get on with the rest of the committee business. With us today we have Emily C. Anurome, Minnesota FFA State Vice President from Mountain Lake. Miss C. Anurome, please.
Chair Sundin, members of the committee, my name is Emily C. Anurome, and I am Minnesota FFA State Vice President. I grew up in Mountain Lake, Minnesota, where I was a student and an FFA member at the Mountain Lake High School. Currently, I'm majoring in agricultural education right here in St. Paul at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. But I'm confident that if it were not for my FFA experience, I wouldn't even realize that agricultural education exists, let alone understand the connectiveness of agriculture, food, and natural resources to our economy and the vibrant, healthy lives of all citizens, not just those who live or work on the farms. And I'll pass it off to Anna to introduce herself.
This is Miss Anna Early, Minnesota FFA state report from Litchfield, Minnesota.
Chair Sundin, members of the committee. I'm Anna Early, a 2020 graduate of Litchfield High School and a current student at Ridgewater College in Willmar, Minnesota. I live and work on my family's dairy farm and am a proud member of the Litchfield FFA chapter. This year, I'm serving as the Minnesota FFA state reporter, and it is an honor to speak with you this afternoon as we celebrate National FFA Week here in Minnesota.
Okay. Great. Are there any questions for the FFA representatives from the committee? Okay. If there's nothing if there's nothing else you'd like to add, the two FFA representatives.
Chair Sundin, we do have a little bit more to add. I'll start with my little part. In FFA, we sometimes say that future is our first name. We want our students to appreciate and understand the traditions of agriculture and the challenges and opportunities agriculture faces today. But we also look to the future and the way yesterday's and today's needs might not be the same as tomorrow's. Agricultural careers are not limited to just on-the-farm jobs, and therefore those jobs can exist in communities that are less rural and can be done well by people who may not have a personal farming experience. In fact, we need people with different backgrounds in order to meet the moments that are coming our way in the future. Students in communities like Wilmer, Austin, and St. Paul may not live on farms, but they have some of the world's biggest food and agriculture companies hiring right in their backyards. We can see the changes in supermarket aisles as new products that are gluten-free or respond to cultural diets brighten up consumer choices. These evolutions drive economic markets and are a result of a more open-minded agriculture. That open-mindedness starts with students envisioning a future for themselves within agriculture, food, and natural resources. My experience started with a caring local teacher who convinced me to try a career contest. Our goal wasn't to win the event, it was just not to come in last. And when our very raw agricultural sales team came in 5th out of 6, we were elated. I will never forget my teacher explaining to us that the reason we didn't come in last wasn't because we were smarter or better than the other team. It was because our team had all the members and theirs didn't. She didn't tell us that to humble us or make us study harder. She did it to help us understand that it matters that we show up. And when we show up, it matters. I think that's an important thing that agricultural education and FFA does for students. It helps teenagers from all sorts of backgrounds to realize that success happens when they put themselves in the picture. And without them, that success just doesn't happen. If the future is our first name, we want students from all communities to have access to the essential rewarding careers and have their voices and their perspectives be included in decision-making about food, the environment, and the rich agriculture tradition Minnesota is known for. That starts with showing up and providing a space for everyone to get an education that empowers them to act.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your comments there, Ms. C. Ann New Rome. Next up, Anna Early. Please go ahead.
As representatives of FFA, we represent 35,000 students in Minnesota from all kinds of backgrounds who are taking agriculture, food, and natural resource classes as part of their high school careers. We are projecting that this year, 11,000 of them will choose to take that education to the next level as FFA members. Whether they are taking a welding class for a hands-on break in their academic day, or they are passionately learning about animal nutrition, students get to explore careers and develop technical and professional skills when they take these classes. As the average age of farmers continues to grow, we know we need to prepare the next generation of farmers. But it's also important to recognize that farming is not done in a vacuum. We often talk about farms as economic engines. They generate additional jobs and economic opportunities because of what is produced on that farm. We do not need 100% of our students to become farmers. The strength of agriculture depends on related and supportive careers performed by the people who understand and are invested in a kind of agriculture that envisions success on multiple levels and from multiple perspectives. There are certainly farmers like my family, but my personal goal is to become a milk inspector. There are agronomists, nutritionists, veterinarians that are supporting the ethical, efficient production of crops and livestock. There are innovators and researchers exploring and developing better ways and better products that better meet the needs of our environment and our communities and our diversifying agriculture.
Well, thank you for those comments. We have time for one question from the committee. Is there any interest? Okay, hearing none, thank you. It's always nice to hear from the next generation of farmers, and really appreciate your time today. Thank you both. Next up, we have the Minnesota Department of Agriculture Emerging Farmers Report. The working group was authorized in the last cycle and to provide a report due back in January the 15th. We have 35 minutes blocked for this discussion. Assistant Commissioner Bailey, please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Sundin and committee members. My name is Patrice Bailey, Assistant Commissioner here at MDA. I am in charge of three divisions Ag Marketing and Development Division, which includes biofuels and Minnesota Grown, to name a few. I'm also in charge of feed and food safety, which includes cottage food and many others, and dairy and meat division. I have the following testifiers with me is Michael Burchard, who is the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Embry Hills Community College. I also have Henry Jimenez, is the Executive Director for the Latino Economic Development Center. And I have Naima Dehor, who is a Somali farmer and also the founder of the Somali Farming Association. And she is a working group member. So those are the folks that I have with me. Before I begin, I just wanted to just give a quick intro about myself. I grew up in New York City, five blocks from the Apollo Theater. And for those who are not familiar with the Apollo, it's a major force for the emergence of jazz and hip hop and R&B and swing and so forth. And during my senior year, my mom asked me what am I going to do? You got 6 months left. And I told her that I wanted to be a lawyer. And she said, there's too many lawyers out there. Why don't you do something in agriculture? And I said, agriculture? I don't want to be a farmer. And she said, it's so much bigger than farming. And it's more than you can imagine. And I found myself going to a historically Black college and university, Prairie View A&M in Texas. And my whole worldview has changed for agriculture, and here I am today testifying in front of you about the Emerging Farmer Report and Emerging Farmers in Minnesota. So giving that, Nancy, you can go ahead and advance the slide, please. So the question is, who is an emerging farmer? Emerging farmers do not have a particular look to them, but it is an issue when it comes to who is actually included in the agricultural landscape. Currently, in Minnesota farms, is 99% white, and the average age of a farm is 56 years old. As you have baby boomers that are retiring, you have a lot more of a resurgence of emerging farmers that are advancing, and also a number of historically underserved communities for emerging farmers. Next slide. So as you can see here in our 2020 and 2021 report, this is a breakdown of the population of Minnesota, which is 84% white, and the percentage of Minnesotans that are farmers. And as you can see, is 99.16% white. This is where the disparity is the most apparent. And so when we wrote the report in 2020, we sort of stemmed the report around five particular groups, which were women, people of color, Native Indigenous, people with disabilities, and veterans. Those were the groups that are not currently in abundance here in Minnesota. So that's in addition to other emerging farmers, this was the group, the groups of demographics that we didn't see. Next slide. So we have 26.6 million acres of farmland in Minnesota. And as you can see, the number of farms is 110,000 thereabouts for white farmers. And if you add up Hispanic, American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian, and Black, it comes up to 1,269 combined. And this is based off of the 2017 census, ag census, which comes out every 5 years. And so the next one would come out next year. And we know that the numbers are higher than what's reflected, but we don't have a current mechanism, nor does the USDA, to capture data at the present time. Next slide. So when we did our listening sessions in 2019, we did the listening sessions around the state, and the goal was to find out what the barriers are that's preventing people from entering agriculture in terms of prosperity. As you can see here with the graphic, many have felt overlooked. Broadband is always an issue. Cultural diversity, not just lack of insurance, but also school loans is an issue. And basically, when it comes to credit, that's always an issue. So what you see here is only 26 of the 50 barriers that we were able to obtain when we did our listening sessions. And so in 2019, we did the listening sessions from St. Paul to Rochester. In May of last year, the legislature approved the Emerging Farmers Working Group, which was one of the recommendations in the 2020 report. The report that you have in front of you is the 2021. So I would kind of categorize it as the 2020 is part one and 2021 is part two of the report that we had written. Next slide. So the purpose of the working group is to advise the commissioner on ways in which the MDA can actually improve existing services, if there's things that we need to be able to enhance and make services better. Translation services is another issue that we have to deal with, that we need to improve on those, but it's really to be able to support more emerging farmers in Minnesota. Next slide. In August, we had 101 applications for membership. And this included outreach from the Lieutenant Governor, doing video as a promotion, going to a lot of tribal nations to be able to promote a lot of feedback to try to get people to apply. So we narrowed it down to 17 members here. Naima is one of these 17 members. So this is a reflection of the whole state from Hennepin County down to Carlton County. So the activities that that we have here is that once we had the 17 people, our kickoff meeting was November 6th, and we're probably in our fifth meeting right now. So the goal is for us to, as a working group, is to study MDA funding and policy. The group has had a nice overview of MDA programs, grants, loans, RFA, Rural Finance Authority. And we've also had the four ethnic councils come in and talk about the things that they do, but also ways in which they can also intersect with the working group members in order to assist emerging farmers within their demographic. Next slide. So some of the recommendations and some of these recommendations are carried over from the other report is that currently there isn't a budget right now. We don't have dedicated dollars within MDA for this particular group here. A lot of the work that we were doing for emerging farmers prior to George Floyd was when I was appointed in 2019. And this was always a goal to be able to create this working group, but also create a budget for translation and bilingual services. And so the funding is always something that we would like this committee to actually think about. We also would like to establish a one-stop shop for resources for emerging farmers, grants and funding and so forth. So, and the other part about this is that, as you know, we have the $4.6 billion deficit. And so MDA had committed to find dollars for the working group. And so we continue to move forward to make sure that the working group is being paid for the expertise, but this is also an issue as well. Next slide. So these are some other recommendations that just classifying agriculture more broadly. Currently, and Michael Burchard will probably talk about this a little bit, is that we've been working with Central Lakes Community College in regards to a FBM program, Farm Business Management Program in the Metro. And Keith Olander, who's the dean there, myself and Michael Burchard, and also the president of Dakota County Technical College will be meeting, I believe, this week or next week to talk about what would that look like to have a FBM program in the Metro. It will be something that has never been done before, but it would be it's something that's sorely needed for our communities. We always want to support equity and diversity and inclusivity in regards to strengthening connections. But I really believe that kids, especially in underrepresented communities, kids cannot achieve what they can't see. And so pre-COVID, I was going to many of the schools around the state to talk about agriculture and MBA programs, and especially in communities of color, you know, trying to promote the different programs we have, KMOJ Radio, KFAI, Inside News, M. Chalet Magazine, and many of the comments were, we didn't know that the state had an agricultural agency. We don't hear the word agriculture in the community. And so those things have been addressed and they continue to be addressed as well. Next slide. Thank you. So right now I would like to introduce my first testifier, which is Michael Burchard, to testify.
Yep. Mr. Burchard, can you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Sundine and the committee members. Thanks for the invitation to be here. My name is Michael Burchard. I live in Brooklyn Park, and I work as the Associate Vice President of Equity and Inclusion at Dakota County Technical College and Inverhills Community College. And so being raised in Minnesota, I've always understood the importance of agriculture to our economy and for the prosperity of our communities. So as the Associate Vice President of Equity and Inclusion, I also understand that Minnesota has significant work to do to decrease the racial disparities among many sectors throughout our state, one of them being directly connected to agriculture. I know, and we all know, that we can do better. My spouse and I are emerging farmers, and we're also a Black and an Indigenous household. We own a 108-acre farm in Wadena County, and for decades, we've longed to till the land to contribute positively to the agricultural economy. As I've learned in our exploration, starting a farm can be cumbersome, complicated, and bureaucratic. Shortly after Commissioner Bailey took his role at the Department of Agriculture, I had a chance to meet with him and connect, and we discussed the strategy to hear from emerging farmers around the state. And so we worked together to organize numerous listening sessions. And as you heard from Assistant Commissioner, we learned a lot and we realized that we need to take a deeper dive and to meet regularly with other emerging farmers. So hence the development of the Emerging Farmers Working Group. So the working group has been an opportunity for the Department of Ag to begin to analyze the programs, their departments, and the structure of the organization from an equity lens. And it's been an opportunity for the department to really lean into this work, to be more deliberate in their sharing of resources with the community, especially emerging farming communities, and an opportunity to listen to the needs of emerging farmers. So really, it's truly been a chance for MDA to learn the areas that they need to uplift and to give support to emerging farmers. And I can tell you, as an equity and inclusion professional working in higher education at two metro colleges, this work has inspired me to take a closer look at agriculture's connection to the urban area. So as a colleague of mine at Inverhills Community College, biology teacher Kirsten DeGilio, she's been leading the effort to bring an agriculture degree program to her college that would then lead to a four-year degree. Kirsten and I are working together with others at the college and with the Department of Ag to make this a reality. This also includes, as Patrice had mentioned, bringing a farm business management instructor to the college. So I'll be sure, if you'd like, to provide an update on our work as we progress. But we really do see this as a perfect opportunity to bridge our rural and our urban communities. We're located in Dakota County, which in some sense has a very metro feel, but also a very rural feel. And so this is that opportunity to start bringing these two together. So in conclusion, as my spouse and I begin to plow the land and plant the seeds, we're excited to be a part of this new movement of emerging farmers. We're educators by trade, and we look forward to sharing our progress and what we have learned with our communities and expanding this reality to other emerging farmers. So thanks for giving me the chance to share.
Thank you, Mr. Burchard. Mr. Bailey, who's next?
Yes, Chair Sundin. Our next presenter is Henry Jimenez. Henry Jimenez is the Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. And when the department received CARES Act dollars in the fall of last year, we worked with LEDC and MEDA, Metropolitan Economic Development Center, to work with local food assistance to our emerging farmers. And I would like Mr. Jimenez to actually talk about our partnership.
Mr. Jimenez, would you please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Assistant Commissioner Bailey. My name is Henry Jimenez, the Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. I do want to talk about the partnership that we've had with MDA. I want to tell you a little bit about the start of LEDC, just because they've been part of that since the beginning. This partnership isn't just a few months old. This has been a partnership with LEDC since our start. So since 2003, we have supported hundreds of Latino and other immigrant-owned businesses with support to start or expand their businesses throughout the state. In 2010, we began supporting first-time farmers. Since then, we have had the privilege to support dozens of Latino and Hmong farmers access capital to start their farm in Minnesota and have provided technical assistance to many others. That is in partnership, again, with the Department of Agriculture. Again, these are individuals who are passionate about farming, passionate about Minnesota, and to be quite frank, these are also Minnesotans. They tend to be young, in their 20s, late 20s, early 40s. Many of them have worked in farms but have no family farming ties nor inherited land in Minnesota. These emerging farmers are individuals who want to farm in Minnesota for a living and whose family along with them become farmers. Just like Minnesota farming traditions, for them, farming is also a family affair. At a time when Minnesota needs more farmers, what a perfect way to address an issue our agriculture sector is facing. Our farmers are aging, as Assistant Commissioner mentioned in his report, and we need more to come after them. Let's invest in emerging farmers. Again, as Assistant Commissioner Patrice Bailey mentioned in his report, the state demographics are changing, and while we are making major strides with the departments, it will take significant investment and attention in ensuring that we help more emerging farmers establish their farms and grow. This is how we can invest in our Minnesota agriculture and economic growth. The Latino Economic Development Center has been a recipient of several grants and contracts with the USDA, but most importantly, our closest partner has been with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and more so under the leadership of Commissioner Tom Peterson and Assistant Commissioner Patrice Bailey. With MDA and other organizations, we have been able to jointly organize a yearly Emerging Farmers Conference in which hundreds of farmers and soon-to-be farmers attend from across the state. What a great conference in which several languages are spoken, and one in which MDA and other organizations like ours are connecting and building genuine relationships with emerging farmers, many of whom this is the first interaction with state government. Because of this trust, the relationship LADC and MDA has been able to develop over the conference and other meetings. We were able to rapidly disperse CARES Act funds to BIPOC agriculture producers and workers. As Assistant Commissioner Bailey mentioned, as soon as MDA was able to disburse $340,000 in CARES Act funds to LADC, we were able to administer $4,500 grants to 47 different producers in 15 different counties across the state. This happened within weeks. LADC disbursed $133,000 in grants of $1,000 each to 133 agriculture workers in the meat packing and dairy industries. The demand here was significant, and I can assure you that if there was additional funding here, MDA, LADC, and MEDA would be able to disperse these funds even faster. Overall, LADC's success in agriculture sector is largely due to the support we continue to receive from MDA and its leadership. We look forward to continued partnerships and the success with the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Bailey, who would you have on tap next?
Yes, we have Naima Dior, who's also the founder of the Somali Farmer Association, and she's a current working group member. Naima.
Hi, thank you, Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Naima Dore. I am the Executive Director for Somali American Farmers Association, and I want to take this moment to thank the Chair and members of the committee. I am a young emerging farmer, immigrant farmer from Somalia, first generational farmer and member of the working group. I am also a passionate farmer who I've been farming with my family since 2016, and since then, we have established a very strong community that are eager to learn about the farming. They're really excited about our approach in sustainability and indigenous practices, and more importantly, our love to care for the land. Unfortunately, with our small-scale farming operation, we were not able to sustain ourselves and continue to do the work that we established. The frustration on our end is that, you know, our farmland access has been very traumatizing in the way that we have been searching land because we don't have the background understanding of how to navigate this very complicated and complex system. But currently what we're doing right now is to continue working with our loan officer and try to obtain a land. But again, it's just been something that I think oftentimes emerging farmers are discouraged. And so when the MDA approached us to be part of the listening session, I was able to participate one out of the six. And from there, I realized that I was not alone in all the challenges that in the room folks were expressing in terms of access to a farmland, as well as capital. So one of the things that I want to share today here is to really give you a background in terms of the challenges that my family and I continue to face with land access. We believe that the process is just it's been very challenging to even understand the language and to see what is out there for us to apply, and also resources and funds that could actually allow us to grow in our small scale farming. I want to take this time to again to thank the chair and the members, and I am for the Emerging Farmers Group to continue to advise the commissioner and his team in regards to developing and implementation of the program and initiative. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Bailey?
Yes. Yes, Chair, Mr. Chair, that concludes our testifiers. I want to thank you and the committee for having us here, and I'll take any questions.
Certainly, members, we have a few minutes for questions. We have Vice Chair Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank Commissioner Bailey and the testifiers today for being here to share your experiences on the landscape of what you guys are dealing with in today's agriculture economy. I think the first question I have is probably more so for Commissioner Bailey. Of the emerging farmers that you, the data that you guys have, how many of the emerging farmers do you guys collect on what type of farm operations they do, whether that's dairy or specialty producers? Do you guys have data on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vice Chair Vang, thank you for that question. We have some data, but working with our partners with the Farm Service Agency, currently some of that data is not being captured currently, and we would like to actually have a directory in which we can start putting emerging farmers on this list so we have an accurate number so that we can report out. But I can get some information for you in regards to that.
Sounds good. I just want to thank you again, and I appreciate the report. I will definitely spend some time to look it over. If I have any questions, I will connect with you, Commissioner Bailey. I think moving forward with the Minnesota starting to build a robust hemp economy, and the legalization of cannabis, I'm pretty sure that more communities are going to be interested in entering those industries. And so, any way that you guys could help inform us on where to best invest those resources to support new and emerging farmers, I'd be interested in that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to remind everyone that we should be respectful of other people that we're going to be asking questions here as well. So we can be concise with their questions and our responses, that would be terrific. Representative Thompson, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Bailey. Quick comment and question I want to add. I heard Naima talk about how much red tape it is to get access. And so a lot of times these funds come in. The interesting thing is I traveled to Hibbing, Minnesota yesterday, and Virginia, Minnesota. If I was in that area, just talking about, and I found out one thing that we all have in common across this state is poverty, like really, especially in the African-American community and communities of color, poverty. How can we create pathways for this career field to be a reality? Because this is good money also, and always is the reason why we don't see these people of color and African-Americans on these John Deere tractors.
Yes. Commissioner Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Thompson, for that question. You might be surprised that there are a few African Americans that are on John Deere tractors. but in regards to different pathways and red tape, that's one of the reasons why we did the listening sessions. And why we wrote the report, when I was appointed, is to be able to take a look at what is the red tape, what's preventing people, especially in BIPOC communities, to be able to access the programs that we already have. And that graphic, a lot of people just don't know that these programs exist, and others who know may not tell that a particular RFP is coming, maybe to keep that information to themselves. But we are moving into an age in which we are making sure that the issue around equity is in the forefront of MDA, so that we can make sure that everyone has a piece of agriculture in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Thompson?
Yes, I did have a follow-up. One thing we do know is that, you know, we have crime in my community, in our community, a lot of crime.
Mm-hmm.
I think a way to stop crime is a job. Like, you give a person an opportunity for money. Let me finish this part. Particularly our children here, there's no such thing as these are somebody else's kids. These are all our kids. And so these career pathways and the way to getting these kids into these career fields here is particularly what I'm asking about also, because this is our future that I'm talking about.
Great. Thank you for your comments. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just simply wanted to thank Assistant Commissioner Bailey and all those who testified. This is extremely important work. And just to kind of piggyback on what Representative Thompson was saying, one of the most moving experiences I've had is visiting Growing Power in Milwaukee, a farm led by Will Allen, African-American center of Milwaukee, and really just a successful farm business, growing food for the local community, creating jobs. It was really powerful. And so I think, farms can be a source of opportunity all across our state. And then locally in Northfield area, we have new American communities who want to farm, want to expand their farm businesses, or want access to farms or access to land. And they also want food that's grown for them. And so I just think this work is very, very important, and appreciate the report today.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Hansen has the most concise question yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I think the issue of why there isn't access is very simple, and it's called greed, that land values are driven up based on as long as we have a federal ag support system and a tax policy that rewards the largest farmers and provides them with federal cash that they can use to drive up the rental prices and drive up the land prices, it's harder for anybody, and particularly BIPOC communities, to get access to land. And to buy that land is a unique process. And if you've ever been to a farm auction, and I've been to a lot of them, where I've seen the errors drive up the price, say it's not enough, you've got to go higher and higher and higher. And so at the end, it's only the largest farmers that are bidding, because they have an unlimited banking support system, and they're getting huge amounts of federal cash. And that doesn't allow young people, it doesn't allow BIPOC people, it doesn't allow women to access land. And without accessing the land, we can have all the programs we want. We have to take a look at our tax policies and our land and our agriculture policies to reward emerging farmers. And we've done some of that, but there's a lot of, I know there's people that are suffering, but there is a heck of a lot of cash out there right now, and land values are going through the roof, as are rental values.
Thank you very much, Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen. Any closing words, Commissioner Bailey?
I just want to say thank you so much, Chair Sundin, and also to the committee members. When I wake up every day, I always look through agriculture through the lens of someone who comes from a city that doesn't have agriculture, and really see it through the lens of BIPOC communities to make sure that the services that we have within MDA are available to all, regardless of their zip code. And I think it's really important that funding be a component for emerging farmers. Currently, that's not, that's something that we do not have dedicated dollars for, but it is much needed in regards to expertise with our farming and agriculture community within the state. So with that said, I just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity, and I'm available anytime people want to get in touch with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony today. Next up, we have Representative Jess Hansen with House File 1274. This would regarding permitting the Commissioner of Agriculture to accept donations on behalf of the Emergency Farmer Working Group. Representative Hansen, we have about 10 minutes blocked out for this bill. Please move your bill and begin.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. And thank you, members of the committee. I move that HF 1274 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. As we've just heard, the Emerging Farmers Working Group is an important aspect in the next age of farming. And I want to thank all the testifiers for their contribution to this work and for their continued support of this working group. My bill seeks to provide $20,000 over 2 years to further the objectives of the Emerging Farmers Working Group. This is the top recommendation in the department's report, though it was not in the governor's budget. You've heard a little bit, but let me recap the history of this group. The legislature directed the commissioner to write a report about emerging farmers in Minnesota. Then the report recommended the creation of this working group, but there were no funds appropriated. This working group has met 4 times with a facilitator since its implementation and has done a lot of great work. This work has been paid for by pulling together undedicated funds and relying on unpaid volunteer work. These funding shortfalls limit the ability of this group to do as much work as there is to be done. The working group's legislative directive is to advise the commissioner and legislature regarding the development and implementation of programs and initiatives that support emerging farmers in the state. By statute, this group includes people and organizations that represent people who are farmers or aspiring farmers, who are women, veterans, persons with disabilities, American Indian or Alaskan Natives, members of a community of color, young and urban, and any other emerging farmers as determined by the commissioner. This is important work, so it's just as important that we provide them the resources that they need to collect and provide us with the data that will lead us to make effective decisions and investments in the future. The creation of this new account and empowering their ability to accept donations will help expand the reach of this critical work. We want more farmers engaged in our industry, and we know that diverse experiences add strength and value to the overall industry and economy. This investment is a reflection of our values, and it honors our commitment to addressing the barriers facing farmers today. Testifying today is Hannah Bernhardt. She's a working group member. We also have with us Stu Laurie, who's the Director of Government Relations with the Minnesota Farmers Union, available for questions if needed, but he is not testifying. And I've also received a message of support from the Central Minnesota and Duluth Young Farmers Coalitions in support of this bill. So Chair Sundin and committee members, thank you for hearing this important bill. I'm looking forward to laying this over and funding this group with your support. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to now turn it over to our testifier, Hannah.
Hannah Bernhardt, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Bernhardt, and I'm the owner and operator of Medicine Creek Farm in Findlayson, Minnesota. Since 2016, I've been raising grass-fed beef and lamb, pastured pork, and livestock guardian dog puppies using rotational grazing and soil health practices. I direct market meat to customers looking to support regenerative agriculture, primarily through our website and social media. By many people's standards, I am an unconventional farmer, but I see myself as part of a growing group of emerging farmers interested in providing food for my community while taking care of our environment. As such, in 2019, I joined Assistant Commissioner Bailey for the Emerging Farmer Listening Session held in Duluth, and I subsequently applied for and received a position on the inaugural Emerging Farmers Working Group. As the 2021 legislative report states, people affected by policies and decision-making should be involved in the creation of that policy and those decisions. And I agree that listening directly to the voices of emerging farmers is central to making institutional change that will help us start our farms and succeed. To hear those voices, though, it's important to begin by acknowledging the value of our time and contributions and the barriers to even participating in the working group. Lack of funding for the group could exclude participation from those who don't have organizational support and may not be able to afford childcare or to take time away from off-farm work. I personally had to bring my then 3-year-old son with me to that first listening session, where Assistant Commissioner Bailey brought him paper and markers so I could participate in the discussion. I doubt that's in his job description, but there's also currently no dedicated staff or funding for a group facilitator. So House File 1274 addresses these barriers and aligns with the number one recommendation in the Emerging Farmers Legislative Report to fund the group to appropriate levels. Proposals also has the support of the Minnesota Farmers Union and the Minnesota chapters of the National Young Farmers Coalition. So I'm really pleased to see it put forward and hope we can gain your support as well. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Representative Hansen, as well as Assistant Commissioner Bailey and his staff, for working to bring equity to agriculture in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Hansen, did Stu Laurie from the Minnesota Farmers Union have testimony available?
Chair Sundin, he is not here to testify, but is here to support this initiative and answer any questions that members might have.
Just wondering what he's up to, that's all. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for the representative. Representative Hansen, a couple of years back, we were able to get some donations for the tractor rollover protection program. I'm just wondering why the department can't accept donations for this program without new legislation. Can you apprise me of that, please?
Representative Hansen, please.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Sundin. Representative Anderson, the current statute does not call for that right now. And so we want to allow them to accept that. I'd be happy to send you the bill language if you'd like to see that, but it just isn't written that way right now. From my understanding, I will defer to others if they have additional comments on that.
Representative Anderson, follow up?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Maybe we could have that supplied to the committee then. Representative Hansen, that would be helpful. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, what is your pleasure, Representative Hansen?
Chair, I'd like to renew my motion for this HF 1274 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus ag finance bill, please.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Hearing that, House File 1274 is laid over. Representative Lippert has the next two bills. We'll start with House File 110, deals with statewide soil health action plan development funding provided. Representative Lippert, we have about 15 minutes blocked out for this bill. Please move your bill.
Sorry, I'm unmuting myself. I move that House File 1010 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
Okay, I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do have an author's amendment, so I also move the A1 amendment.
Okay, and what does the A1 amendment do?
The A1 amendment simply adds a $1 million appropriation for the years 2022 and also 2023 for the Ag BMP section of House File 1010.
Okay, any questions on the A1 amendment, committee? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
No.
This motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed with your bill as amended. Representative Hooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill emerged from the work of the Legislative Coordinating Commission's Subcommittee on Water Policy. We've already talked about soil health in this committee and have discussed how it's good for agriculture and for water quality too. This bill calls for the development of a statewide soil health action plan to provide for an organized implementation of the practices that are so beneficial to soil health. The second section funds research for precision agriculture that can help reduce fertilizer use and pesticide use, as well as reduce the amount of water used for irrigation. And then the third section provides funding for the Ag BMP loan program This program funds local implementation of clean water policies or practices at a low cost, helps landowners purchase equipment, results in less erosion and runoff to rivers and streams. It also helps landowners fix and stabilize gullies, waterways, shorelines, riverbanks, and it needs adequate funding too. Dr. David Mulla from the University of Minnesota is here to testify, and he can say more.
Dr. Mulla, would you please identify yourself and provide your testimony?
Honorable Chair Sundin and honorable members, thank you. I'm David Mulla. I'm a professor and chair of the Precision Ag Center at the University of Minnesota. And I'd like to share my screen. I have a few slides to show on this topic. Precision agriculture is a way towards achieving sustainable agriculture, which is very relevant to soil health. And I want to show a few examples. Precision agriculture is a management practice applied at the right rate, right time, and right place. And this is very general. It could include variable rate fertilizer, irrigation, or herbicides, so that we don't over-apply and we only target the areas that need. This has many benefits for farmers, including increased profitability and increased efficiency of inputs. And it also has many benefits for society, including reduced environmental pollution and better soil health. And the graph on the right is an example of what we can achieve with variable rate nitrogen management as a function of the amount of nitrogen applied and the precipitation. So our research has shown we get anywhere from a 30 to a 45% reduction in the nitrates that are lost to the environment with variable rate nitrogen. We also are working on other projects such as soybean aphid detection with remote sensing to allow for spot spraying and early detection, thereby avoiding losses that can reach as high as 40%. We're working with integrated precision irrigation management that involves variable rate irrigation, variable rate fertigation, and implementation of cover crops into the rotation. We also are very interested in job creation and workforce development through university industry collaboration. And we achieve a lot of our objectives through extension and outreach to agribusiness and growers. And I might add that we're working actively with historically Black colleges and universities and with tribal colleges to achieve some of these goals. Here are some examples of existing university agribusiness collaborations. Through precision agriculture, which is one of the top 10 revolutions in agriculture of all time, we've helped form hundreds of companies nationwide. Local examples include Soil Tech, Farmers Edge, Geosys, and Terra Centec, Earth Scout, Aglytics, and parts of the large portfolios by Land O'Lakes and CHS. These efforts have large impacts on Minnesota jobs and workforce development and placement. And we have quotes from many of these companies showing that our relationships with them have led to tangible impacts. And there's a huge growth potential in many of these areas for use of things like robotics, machine learning, big data analysis, and sensor networks. That concludes my brief presentation on this topic. And I will turn it back to Representative Lippert.
Representative Lippert, you have another testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Jim Stark is here as well.
Mr. Stark, would you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony? Please.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. For the record, my name is Jim Stark. I am the director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission's Subcommittee on Water Policy, and this bill comes out of that subcommittee. I believe that we have Dr. Ann Winkowski from the university here to testify.
Okay. I don't have that name on my list, but please identify yourself and testify if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I am Ann Marcel Lewandowski. I'm on the staff of the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center, and I'm coordinator for the Minnesota Office for Soil. I cannot take a position on funding directly to the university, but I do want to make some technical comments about the proposal. First, if we want healthy water, we have to manage soil health. Soil is a workhorse across the entire state functioning to impact where water flows and what pollutants are in it. And we know that how we manage soil impacts how well it functions to supply healthy drinking water, to support agricultural productivity, habitat, recreational resources, to mitigate flooding, and to store atmospheric carbon. The current enthusiasm for better soil health management is not new, and it's important to note that leadership on the topic is not limited to a small or a special interest group. My colleagues and I at the university have collaborated on soil health issues with agricultural producers and producer organizations, the local government staff, state and federal agencies, environmental organizations, agricultural finance community, and the food and agriculture industries. Now, each of these stakeholders has a different take on why and how to manage soil, and they have different strengths for influencing soil management. The Minnesota Office for Soil Health has twice convened this particular mix of stakeholders where we facilitated discussions across these sectors. We observed a readiness to learn and work together and a real eagerness to see the broad outcomes that have been suggested by the results of small-scale work. So a soil health action plan, which is currently not on any one stakeholder's work plan, would facilitate that cooperative process of widespread learning and capacity building. Thank you for giving me time to speak, and I welcome any questions.
I appreciate your testimony. Any questions to the testifiers at this point? Okay. Hearing none, seeing none. Moving along to members, since this bill appropriates money and we don't have a target yet, I would like to entertain a procedural motion to delete Section 3 of the bill, which is the section that pertains to our Minnesota Department of Agriculture account, and lay that over for possible inclusion in the Office Finance Bill. Representative Lippert?
Mr. Chair, I move we delete Section 3 with the understanding it will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill.
Okay. Any questions on that motion? Okay. Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay? Okay, this motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill as amended is before us. Representative Lippert, do you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 1010 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
Okay. Thank you. The motion is before us. Mr. Smith, would you please take the roll?
Mr. Chair?
Aye. Oh, excuse me, Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Sometimes I don't get my finger down to the raise question button quite fast enough, but a little bit of an unusual motion here to separate out part of the bill without a delete all amendment, but I guess we'll go along with that. But I do have a question for the bill author, Representative Lippert, if he would stand for a question.
I will, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lippert, Representative Lippert.
I will, Mr. Chair.
Representative, we heard another of your bills last week pertaining again to soil health, and it's a good cause, a good situation to be in. But are these bills going to be in competition with each other in terms of funding, or give us kind of the lay of the land in terms of why you have two of these bills both pertaining to the same topic?
Representative Lippert, clarification, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Yeah, so this, the previous bill that we heard a presentation on didn't have a section related to a comprehensive soil health plan, but that discussion has come out of the subcommittee for water policy of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Also didn't touch on precision agriculture. So I think especially the soil health, the comprehensive soil health plan for the state, action plan for the state, it would be, you know, a good piece to move forward in parallel with the other bill that we heard.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Yeah, thanks again, Mr. Chair. Representative, how do you see these programs that you are carrying with these bills working in the relation to the Ag Water Quality Certification Program and the EQIP program, other programs out there that work on some of the same things? Will they be kind of doubling up, or do they each have their own specific area to work in your opinion?
Representative Looper.
So I think they have their own areas to work in as current programs do now. I mean, we have the Department of Agriculture does work related to soil health, as does Bowser. And so those two agencies are, you know, both working on soil health. I think we're hearing broad support for doing more within soil health across the agencies that touch in these areas to put these important practices in place.
Thank you. Representative Anderson?
No further questions.
All right. Any other questions, comments on the bill? Okay. The bill as amended is before us. Mr. Smith, would you please take the roll?
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang votes aye. Anderson? Oh, you're muted, Representative Anderson.
I was also choking here. Anyway, yeah, I would vote aye on the bill.
Anderson votes aye. Representative Burkle.
No.
No. Burkle, no. Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Hansen, R.
He's excused temporarily. He's in meeting with the
government. Okay. Hansen, R. Excused. Hansen, J.
Hansen, J. Aye.
Hansen, J. Aye. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Miller.
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. All right. I am seeing 9 ayes, 3 nays.
So on a vote of 9-3, the motion prevails and bill is amended. It will move on to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Thank you, Representative Lippert and the testifiers. Next up is House File 80. Representative Lippert has the farmer lender mediation period extended. We've got about 20 minutes tops for this bill. Okay, the next bill, 80, was heard and laid over on January 25th, so we've already heard the main issues. I will bring House File 80 back before the committee. Representative Lippert, hope to have a good discussion, but we will be voting by 2:28 p.m. With the bill before us, Representative Lippert, you have a motion on your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a DE1 amendment, and I move the DE1 amendment. And I can briefly explain what this amendment does and why it's coming up now.
Please so do.
Over the last year, we've heard multiple times about the Farmer Lender Mediation Program for farmers and its benefit for farmers, especially in times that are uncertain. The Farmer Lender Mediation Program will need to be reauthorized in 2022, but we don't want to put anything to chance and want to take the time to reauthorize it now. When the Farmer Lender Mediation was reauthorized in 2015, it was also reauthorized a year early. So one thing the DE amendment does is reauthorize the Farmer Lender Mediation Program until 2027. Second, As we've been having conversations about extending the mediation timeframe due to COVID, in our last conversation in committee, Marinelle Kreisler shared, the director of farmland mediation program, shared that the normal 90-day timeframe often isn't enough time for farmers, and this timeframe often feels rushed. And we had a bipartisan conversation in committee that day about whether one of the structural changes we should be making was to add more time to the program generally. And since then, I've had more conversations with farm advocates, and in those conversations, they also supported adding more time and said that would be helpful. So the DE amendment extends the time frame for mediation from 90 days to 120 days. In all of our policymaking work, I want to be thinking about how we keep farmers on the farm and how we can have a future in Minnesota with more farmers, not fewer. I think this reauthorization is aligned with its value, as is providing farmers with a little more time to find a mediated resolution with their lender. Marinelle Kreisler is available for questions, and I also want to make sure we leave room for as much public testimony and questions as possible. So we can turn to public testimony now, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. We have about four people that would like to weigh in on this. I'll ask everybody to be very concise with their comments. Is there someone representing the Minnesota Farm Credit, either Aaron McBeth or Perry Osnes, Compere Financial, or Howard Olson from the Ag Country Farm Credit Services? Please weigh in.
Mr. Chair, I'm Perry Osnes with Compere Financial. So,
Mr. Osnes, please.
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, again, my name is Perry Osnes. I serve as Vice President of Legislative Affairs for Compere Financial. I'm here today testifying on behalf of my organization, Compere Financial, whose territory covers the eastern and southern parts of Minnesota. I'm also testifying on behalf of Ag Country Farm Credit Services, our farm credit partner, whose territory covers the western, west central, and northwest region of Minnesota. Together, our two associations provide financing, credit, and farm business services in nearly all 87 counties. Just from a Compere perspective, we have approximately 24,000 clients in Minnesota who are member owners of our cooperative. We do have concerns with House File 80 and the Delete Everything Amendment being considered by the committee today dealing with the Farmer Lender Mediation Act. Both Compere Financial and Ag Country are federally chartered institutions and have participated with the Farmer Lender Mediation Program since it was created in 1986. I want to add, our loan officers don't wait for a borrower that's distressed to file for mandatory mediation and with a collection or foreclosure matter. As federally regulated entities through the Farm Credit Administration, both Compere and Ag Country have additional guidelines we are required to follow for financially distressed clients as part of the Farm Credit Administration's borrower rights policies. We work diligently with our borrowers to help them avoid ultimate foreclosure in many ways. Each situation is different, but every borrower is afforded our lending expertise for weeks and months prior to these difficult situations. We believe the mediation program as currently structured works well, including the current 90-day period. Under current law, once mediation services are requested by the borrower, a mediator has 10 days to notify relevant parties and prepare for the initial meeting that must be held within the next 20 days. These first 30 days are often needed for the borrower, their advocate, and the mediator to collect necessary information to make mediation sessions with the lender productive. After the initial meeting, the following 60 days under the law offer ample time, in our opinion, for additional meetings and discussions. More time added to this process and usually deteriorating financial conditions of the borrower can exacerbate already difficult situations and prolong the inevitable, which isn't good for anyone. We certainly understand from a farm credit perspective the rationale behind the Minnesota legislature twice last year temporarily extending the 90-day mediation period in light of the COVID situation and the uncertainty related to conducting virtual mediation meetings, accessing necessary loan, real estate, and financial documents in certain offices that were shut down or impacted by the pandemic. However, since the temporary extension has expired, we support keeping the regular 90-day period under current law, as offices have reopened and in-person or electronic exchange and availability of documents are readily available, whether through in-person meetings or virtual. So we believe that to make a significant change with the mediation timelines at this time without more comprehensive discussions and additional data showing the time period longer than 90 days would be beneficial, isn't warranted, and One thing about the extensions previously, of course, that was due to COVID, but if we're going to be extending it beyond that, we just do not see the rationale for that. Without further input and engagement with farm credit lenders and others. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the end of my testimony. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. We have a couple more testifiers we'd like to hear from. Mark Maidke, Citizens State Bank of Hayfield, please.
Yes. Mark Maidke here, and I'm president of Citizens State Bank of Hayfield. We're a rural bank out of Rochester, Minnesota. 50% of our customers are ag customers, and so we work pretty darn close and depend upon the ag community for our business. And I have been around long enough to have gone through the mediation process back in the 80s. I also served on the 2016 task force that the House put together to consider mediation programming 5 years ago. And at that point, there was the consideration of why do we need to keep doing this extension? The question came up, and the reason we need to keep doing the extension is because altering a contract between a creditor and a borrower is not legal, it's not constitutionally valid, unless the legislature declares an emergency. And so they declared an emergency back in the 80s in the farm crisis and set up this mediation program. And so then every few years, the legislature has to again reaffirm that there's an emergency in the farming industry to continue to extend the mediation program. So that is one reason that I think we should have another task force look at this again before we extend it out to 2027, I think they're asking. Instead of, we've got a whole year while it's still in place, let's have a task force take a look at it and figure out how much longer do we need it? Do we need more days, actually? I have heard from customers, other bankers that have said that the mediation program now that has become more technology-based is actually a little bit easier to keep everybody moving and to get everybody to the table to talk things over. As a previous testifier said, we do meet with our customers for years ahead of time before these problems build over years. It's not something that just comes up immediately. And so it's something we work with that customer ahead of time. We work with the customer if we have to go to mediation, through mediation, and we work with that customer after mediation. Because you have the same issue no matter what, before, during, and after. Can that customer make money? And can he survive? And if he can't survive, you're doing him a disservice by having him continue to lose money year after year. You need to figure out a way to help them survive and to keep what they can. So I would urge you not to do the extension at this time because it just hasn't been found to be necessary. One thing that I have heard as a recommendation is that the extension service and the mediators need better technology. And that is where maybe we could put some resources right now, better technology to work with the customer and to coordinate these meetings. And that's about it. So thank you. Thank you for considering this.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Maidke. Next, we have Chuck Aug, representing Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. Mr. Aug, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify with concerns on House File 80 and the underlying amendment. I'm the president, CEO of F&M Community Bank in Preston. It's actually down near Hayfield, far southeast Minnesota. And I'm here representing the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. Today is my 40th anniversary of working for the bank, which means I started right in the 1980s, which spawned the Farmer Mini Lender Mediation Program. As an ag bank, we're very familiar with the Farmer Lender Mediation. We've just completed three of these mediations in the last 3 years. And as the previous testifiers have stated, these farmers many times are our customers, not only our customers, but our friends and neighbors. And we spend a lot of time and work hard to find a solution on these difficult financial matters that arise. That's what ICBM member banks do. Previously, when concerns or extensions regarding the program have come up, the legislature has exercised caution and put together a task force of stakeholders in 2016 to discuss these matters. ICBM had a member on that task force. And when the recommendations were made in 2017, there was no mention of a need to increase the mediation time period or increase the time period that creditors cannot enforce eligible debts like what is being proposed in these amendments. From our experience, our bank has found that by the time mediation is necessary, a significant amount of time has been invested in working with the borrowers. And this is not a matter of days, it's typically months, if not years. And we've never had any problems meeting the current timeline. And many times we've actually extended the mandatory timeline so we can get an agreement worked out. This is necessary to have the mediator, creditor, and borrowers all acting in good faith. With longer mediation periods, you need to understand that it ties up our bank's assets and prevents us from getting resources to other struggling businesses, individuals that need them. As Mark mentioned, I think if there's a further desire to look at the length of these mediation periods and the time to enforce the debt, and certainly the extension of the program, we would encourage the legislators to pause and pull together stakeholders to study this issue and see if any changes are necessary. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Aug. We have time for a couple of questions, quick ones, and then hopefully get on to a vote. We will vote at 2:28. So Representative Cleburne, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, this is really more of a comment to you. As a mediator who's done thousands of mediations, I would say to you, the importance of mediation is making sure that people are together at the table. And when I'm listening to the banker, I believe that their intent is very good, but the position that they're coming, the lens is very different. The farmer is looking at losing their home, losing their farm, losing their livelihood. They may have been exposed to legal ease, but they're not as in tune with all of the nuances, as is the banker. The banker works with contracts all the time. The banker works with lawyers all the time. The banker is not emotionally involved in that it's not their home. To extend this short period of time for the families to either come to terms with whatever the final outcome might be, or to figure out some alternative way of remedying the problem or an agreement that works best for their families, is really key to long-term mental health and is key to long-term peace for the entire family. Not one person is impacted here. It's a ripple effect for the family, and I would like for us to keep that in mind. This small extension of going to 120 days is really critical to the well-being of the entire family and possibly the community as a larger piece. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, you have a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments and a question. It was mentioned that by Representative Cleburne that they need to be together at the table. I'd remind members that it's a university regulation that is precluding that right now because of the COVID situation and such. So, yeah, we need to get back to the table, but it is a university policy that is not allowing that at the current time. I looked at some of these timelines, 5 days to get a packet ready after receiving a notice, 14 days to respond back to that packet, 5 days to set up the first orientation meeting. The first session must be held within 30 days of that original filing. And Mr. Chair, you said we had heard the main issues of the bill. This is really an entirely new bill. This should not be taken up as a DE amendment. Again, we have 15 months before this program needs to be extended again, June of 2022. I really don't feel that we've heard any testimony about what's not working with the current situation in the current 90-day package. Technology is improving, and I think the best suggestion I've heard is that maybe we need to invest in some new technology if there are some roadblocks that would keep some of these things from not happening in a more timely fashion. So I do not support this, Mr. Chair, when we come up for a vote, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. We're in the bonus round here. We need to move along. Representative John Thompson, go ahead briefly, please.
Chair, and I heard invest in technology a couple of times, but I'm honestly just wanted to say we need to invest in the people. We need to invest in the people. We need to give these people. We're talking about a whole industry. These farmers provide things that we need here. And so I think that we should, because this COVID-19 pandemic, we didn't ask for that. It chose us. And so I think that we should really think about, and I will be supporting this, giving a little bit more time, because the banks don't lose ever. They'll take that property, that person's home, and resell it for cheaper than the dollar. You know, so I just want to make sure that we're understanding that this pandemic has caused a lot of heartache, a lot of turmoil for not only families, but farmers and everybody. And we should keep that in mind and not invest in things, but invest in people. And these people need our help. And so I will be supporting this, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Luick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Anderson's comments. This is a complete switch. Some people would refer to it as a bait and switch. You're talking about extending the program that needs to have a really thorough look. It merits a thorough, deep look to just blast it through with a couple day notice on an amendment that proposes this is just not the way to run a railroad. And we need to remember this extension thing that we were so focused on was driven by COVID-19 situation. And as Representative Anderson said, we've got a university in Minnesota that has got some rules in place for their people that are frankly hurting resolving a lot of these issues because their folks can't even participate in the face-to-face meeting under any circumstance. So I think we're way, way over our skis here, Mr. Chair, and I would suggest this thing be slowed down and we take time to do it right. Haste makes waste. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Luick. We just have a couple minutes left. This will conclude the end of the discussion at this point. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. House File 80, as amended, is now before us. We have just a minute left. Any final comments before we proceed to the vote, Representative Lippert?
Yeah, I'll just say a couple things. I mean, I think we are still definitely in a slow-rolling emergency related to farmers and the farm crisis. The last ag census showed over the last 5 years, we've lost a significant number of farms in Minnesota. I do trust that community banks have good relationships with the farmers and have those conversations. But as I talk with farm advocates, I hear that more and more of these loans are being handled by national financial institutions, and the farmers don't have that relationship. And these institutions aren't investing in the community in the same way. So I think these are good reasons to build on the conversations we've had and extend this another 30 days.
Thank you. Do you care to renew your motion?
I do. I'll say I renew my motion that House File 80 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Commerce Committee.
Okay, the motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please take the roll.
Chair Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang votes aye. Anderson?
Nay.
Anderson nay. Burkle?
Nay.
Burkle nay. Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund aye. Hansen R?
Hansen R aye.
Hansen R aye. Hansen J?
Hansen J aye.
Hansen J aye. Cleavorn?
Cleavorn aye.
Cleavorn aye. Lippert?
Lippert aye.
Lippert aye. Luick?
Luick nay.
Luick no. Miller?
Miller no.
Miller no. Nelson?
Nelson no.
Nelson no. Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. That's 8 ayes and 5 nays, Mr. Chair.
On a vote of 8 to 5, the motion prevails, and the bill, as amended, will move on to the Commerce Committee. Thank you, Representative Lippert, and I would tend to think that we have not seen the last of this bill in this committee. So adjournment time has come. I'll adjourn the meeting and thank everyone for your participation. We'll see you on Wednesday. Thank you.